Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The frost is on the pumpkin. The chill is in the air. It's time to get our homes ready for winter. And our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to help us out, to help us get ready. Hello, Bill.
Good morning. And there was 2 inches of snow north of Duluth, Minnesota last Saturday. That messy, but just so you know, it's coming. You're right.
It's on its way. Well, I think they were predicting like a foot of snow, so that
we missed out. I can't believe it. Doggone it. I was really looking forward to that.
All right. So we know that winter's coming because it always does. And a lot of us wait until we're freezing cold to start taking care of anything. And I know a lot of us have already been running our furnaces. I will admit that I have turned on the heat a couple of times already. But let's start with the heating system, because I think that, of course, that's the thing that sits idle all summer long. And then all of a sudden it's cold and you're like, oh, yep. Is this thing working? Where do we start?
Well, first we started like with my mom. She thinks that since it's not quite November, that she can just sit in more blankets rather than turn the furnace on. But that's not gonna hold out for a little much longer. One of the things that we in the past when we talk about say fall maintenance or getting ready for winter is just the normal stuff like making sure that your filters are changed and maybe having your heating cooling contractor or person that's very knowledgeable, does your service work, come over and double check the system now before it does get cold, because then they just get an onslaught of calls. But one thing we haven't talked about in the past is getting ready for them to come. Because, I don't know, Iowans seem to think that the mechanical room would be the furnaces, that, or the water heater, and other mechanical things for your home, ventilation system maybe. We seem to think that that's a mechanical/storage room.
Sure, it's empty space. We can fill that up, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's a great place for a shelf. What we need to do is get everything away from those appliances, because many people still have furnaces and water heaters that has an open flame, still has a pilot light. Not everything's electronic, and so there's a chance that we could have combustion. But when the people come to work on it, they need to have some space, they need to have some room, and this is also a good time to make sure that in that room that you have boxes completely away from your electrical box where your breakers are. You're supposed to be able to walk right up to it and open up the door and check the breakers in case something happens. You don't need to be stumbling over boxes trying to get there if your lights go out or if it needs service work. And you want to look at that electrical panel while you're down there with the furnace and make sure there's no moisture maybe dripping from the panel. Because sometimes that kind of ties in with your heating and cooling and water heater system, that maybe there's some extra humidity in the room. And then when there's cold air coming in the back of that panel from outside, and many times it does because of the way they're installed, you get condensation in the breakers, they rust out, and it could cause problems. But you want to get that whole area out. And in many homes also, there's a return air duct, which brings in air from the house, runs it through your furnace and warms it up and distributes the warm air throughout the home. So in that return air, it's supposed to be pulling from all the rooms, to have a balanced system. But many times there's a return in that mechanical room in the side of the furnace. And so if you've stored chemicals, many people do that. They'll bring it, okay, it's going to get cold. If it's going to freeze, let's take it to the basement. The only place I have shelves is my mechanical/storage room. And then all of a sudden they're putting Roundup, they're putting, gasoline, the paint thinner, all this stuff in the same room. And so when the furnace works, sometimes it'll pull the fumes of those chemicals. And a lot of times the lids aren't that great, so it pulls the fumes and goes throughout the house, which can cause a lot of, respiratory issues as well. So it's not, just the filter. But you want to check the thermostat as well and make sure that's all working. Now, remember, since you haven't started the furnace, since last, in the spring, the first couple times you're going to smell maybe a slight burn, you know, smell, right, because there's dust accumulated on the equipment. And, you know, if it persists, you know, you want to have your service person come in and take a look at it. But also when the furnace, when your service person is there, ask them, is this particular filter that I have now, is this what's made for this heating and cooling unit? Because they all have different size fans, they all have different ductwork. So you want the optimum amount of air going through it, yet getting the best filtration that you can. And, you know, in many cases, we've gone too far to the right at filtration and tried to stop all the dust, you know, the allergens, the molds. And then we've cut down so much airflow that that poor furnace is just struggling, you know, to move the air. And so then that, you know, that hastens the...
The end of the
furnace.
Yes,
that's the best way to put it. Right. Yeah, it's the end. Yep.
So I think with the filters, a lot of us, oh, right, it's fall. I need to change the filter on my furnace. And then the next time we'll think of it is next fall. So often should we be changing those filters?
That's usually my mentality, too. You know, a fork or 4 or 5 quarts of oil in a truck is good. You know, 8 should be better. I mean, that's only common sense. So, you know, you have, that's why you need to be on a calendar. You know, like dentist appointments, you know, that furnace filter is such an important part of the whole system. If the filter is not optimal at allowing air through yet filtering, then the whole system is inadequate, you know, for your health and for your, you know, your energy bills.
So put that on the calendar,
right?
And assign it to someone?
Yeah, assign it to the person that you know that you think it's just going to be fun watching them do it. Especially when you tell them, you know, take it downstairs and then shake it out real good when you take it outside.
No.
You know, just to watch that. It's great.
All right, put it on the calendar right next to the give the dog heartworm medication get the job done. Well, all right. So that pretty much takes care of furnace issues. Let's think about looking around outside the house, things that we might want to check out before winter comes.
Yeah, one of the things we haven't talked in the past about very much is, you know, well, we always talk about concrete, you know, and check to see if it's heaved up during the, you know, the summer or moved or settled or anything like that. And, you know, and sealing all the, you know, the cracks, clean them out real good and seal the cracks with an adequate type concrete sealer caulking. But what we've missed in a lot of times is the handrails going to the house. Like you go to a set of stairs that in most houses in Iowa usually have like 2 to 3 steps. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're concrete, you know, sometimes they're wood decks. But, you know, especially coming up towards the end of the month, you know, we've had a lot of ice storms at the end of October and, you know, through November. Those handrails, you know, a lot of times it's going to save you from going to the hospital. So now's the time, especially like this coming weekend when it's going to be really nice, is to beef up those handrails and make sure that if you weigh 250 pounds, that if you lose your balance, that's going to keep you from falling down onto your knees or break a hip. And so now when it's, you know, we call these the shoulder months, you know, not hot, not cold. This is a time to really do that kind of work. That's always been kind of a stickler to me is those handrails have to be very solid. And also make sure that that door, the storm door, usually swings out, you know, well, it'd have to in most cases. But when it swings out, that it doesn't rub where the, let's say, the platform of the stairs are, that you have plenty of clearance. So when we do get a, you know, maybe an inch or two of snow,
you can get that door open.
Because, you know, all your doors are egress. You know, if there's something happening in the house, you have to get out the end, you know, the wood door swings in, but the storm doors, a lot of times when we have a big snow, you know, there's a foot of snow. And so, you know, this is the time maybe to think about, well, maybe I should have an awning or something built over the top, you know, to protect that so that I can get out. I talked with someone last winter, and they said, hey, everybody did a great job of clearing my sidewalks and everything, but they don't come up onto the steps because it's not in the contract. And all of a sudden, I couldn't get out, you know. And this fellow, not physically, he couldn't push the storm door, so he was trapped.
Wow.
So, you know, it's those things that we really never talk about, you know, like, say, you know, gutters and, you know, making sure that they're clean and get the downspouts and the extensions put on. Because, you know, when we have in the spring, you know, the ground is still frozen and that foundation is kind of maybe having a half inch gap between the ground and the foundation. You know, we want to make sure that first rain that we get gets away because a lot of times it'll fall down that crack and then flood your basement. A lot of times that's when we get our first ones. So in that whole system, even though it's going to be cold, now's the time to make sure that sump pump, you know, check that now as well to make sure that it's wired correctly, you know, wiggle it, maybe throw some water down in there just to make that sure that that's working. Because, you know, even like I said, even though we're going into the winter, the first time you're going to need it is when you're not ready.
Right. Well, so. And it feels like we've had enough rain this year that we should all know how our drainage is working and if
yes.
the sump pump is working.
But
it's a good idea to go around the house and make sure that your drainage lines are clear and that kind of thing, right?
You know, and I'm a big proponent of, you know, these little spark plug gauges. They're called feeler gauges that, you know, I guess in the old days when we had spark plugs in cars, you would have to measure the gap, and this measured in thousands. And so you can go to, you know, any automotive store, you know, like Napa or something like that, and ask for a spark plug feeler gauge. Go around the house, and now, you know, just start right now. Wherever you see a crack anywhere or a gap, measure it, and it measures it right to the thousandth. Take a picture of it, you know, on your phone, and document the date and document what that gap size is. Because that's going to tell you in the middle of the winter if something's heaving, and in the middle of spring and in the middle of summer, if things are moving, because we need to know if, say, cracks in your foundation wall on the outside as well as the inside, if they're getting bigger. And when you measure something to the thousandth, then you get an accurate measurement. Just using your eyeball and a tape measure that measures 16th, that's usually not going to help you until, you know, usually then you really see, you know, a physical bowing or something. So go around and check those kind of things, and check your doors as well. You know, how well is that storm door shutting? You know, is it going to let a mouse in at the bottom? What about the weather stripping and the trim work around the doors? Is it moving? So that is a really valuable tool, I think, that everybody should have in their toolbox in the house.
All right. Well, we need to take a short break. We'll be back
I know.
It always happens.
We're on a roll.
We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he will answer your questions about the home improvement projects on your to-do list, or maybe some projects that aren't even quite on the list yet. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he is standing by, ready to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You are ready, right, Bill?
I'm all set to go.
Okay.
I'm sitting by, though. I'm too lazy to stand. But
all right. Dave is on the line in Norwalk. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Bill, I moved into a house with a new driveway, and they didn't do the traditional expansion joints on it. They just cut it with a carbide saw. I want to caulk it for the winter.
Okay.
I have no idea, but I can't stuff the traditional stuff in there. I have to squirt something in there.
Okay.
What should I use?
Well, there's a lot of different products. You know, do you have like a favorite hardware store or something you deal with, or a big box store?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, what you do is go into the concrete caulking area. They've got that labeled, you know, and everything, so that you get a, you know, a gray color, so it's not real noticeable when you put it down. And most of the time, they're using a urethane caulk for that in that case. But the big trick is to make sure that is, you know, really clean. And so we've always like pulled something the a little bit smaller than the width of the crack. We'll physically drag that through to get any big chips, because I've used pressure washers before, air blasters, and it doesn't get a lot of the big chips out of there to prevent caulking from going down.
That's a good trick.
Yeah,
that's
so that crack is, like you say, too small for a cord, isn't it? for a caulking cord.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I have seen those caulking cords down to an eighth of an inch. They're not everywhere, but sometimes you can get that eighth of an inch. But make sure that you use a heavy bodied type caulking. Ask them. Now, this one isn't super runny, is it? Because some of them, when they get warm, you know, like say if the concrete is even like 70, 75, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. But it actually goes down. And you put it in, and the next day it's not there, and you keep coming back. You want something that when it's put in, you know, kind of has a little concave dip to it, and it's not proud of the concrete. So when you roll the car across it the first time, you know, you don't have a glob running. But there is an expansion joint against, like, say, your garage slab, though, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
Okay. All right, good. And so they've made cuts, like, every 10 feet or so in the concrete?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they just scored it. Looks like they poured it in a slab, and they kind of went, they did it that way with the carbide saw as opposed to a huge individual panels.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, you just want to make sure that, you know, you can look on the edge of the concrete, you know, dig down along the edge of it where one of the cracks is, and you can see if that crack was cut deep enough to allow the slab to crack. So in some cases you won't see the actual crack, but in many times you will, that if you go to the side of the concrete and then come down where the crack is and follow it to the bottom of the slab, you can actually see where the slab is cracked in that relief joint.
Oh, right on.
Okay.
Do you have any, is there any brand name that you suggest? Can you do that over the air? I don't know.
Oh, well, you know, me personally, I like anything that's like a Quad or a Tremco. But that's just me personally. Has nothing to do with the station. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Dave. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got an email here, Bill, that probably goes into more detail than you have on the top of your head, but it brings up a good question. So I'll read you the email. This is from Greg in Story City. He says, I've been using MERV 8 or 11 filters in my furnace. It's an Amana from about 2005. The fan is set to run on high speed. The temp rise across the furnace is 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Does that sound about right?
Hey, boy, that's where you need to get
right.
Double-checked.
So what I was going to ask you was if you have a question like that, then where do you get the answer?
Okay, that's a type of question that you can Google ASHRAE, and ASHRAE. Just do ASHRAE and then do furnace airflow. And that should take you into where you can then punch in your MERV 8 to 11. And then it will also ask you, like, how many CFM that the fan is. But the trick part to this whole thing is that's just the reason that you really – it's hard to give an answer is because that's just the unit sitting there in a – let's say in a vacuum. When you start adding ductwork and then you start adding somebody closing a vent, somebody putting a piece of furniture over the top of a vent, impacting, like, say, return, or somebody throwing in dampers, this all has an effect on how much air can be driven across it. And then at that also, well, you know, at a slower speed or higher speed, how well that system is going to work in whole. So you're best off when you have something that detailed, you need to get a service person in there, because somebody like me shouldn't anywhere be answering anything like
this,
because that is a highly technical question that your service person should handle for you.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Ryan is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So I have a question that's actually expanding on one you just sort of answered. So I have a concrete that's about 6 years old. And I noticed this year I started to get a lot of spalling pop-outs.
Okay.
And so then I've kind of come to the consensus that, okay, it needs to be sealed more than likely. And then I have some cracks that I was also going to seal. So my question really is, do you seal the cracks first and then apply the sealant to the concrete? And maybe to expand on the sealing of the concrete, does it make sense for concrete to spall, you know, 6 years after it's been laid, and consistently continue to spall.
Was it spalling at starting the first year? Or is it just
started this year?
Well, a lot of times what that spalling is something has been on it, like something dripping from a car, de-icers, specific types of de-icers. And in many cases, you know, what we've seen is like people will drive around a community and whatever, you know, when it's slushy, whatever they pick up then drops onto the sidewalk and or the driveway, and then that will cause the concrete to delaminate, just on the top, the spalling. And so whenever we've had a question like that, I always would get a hold of the Iowa Ready Mix Association when I was still way, way, way back in the old days. But the Iowa Ready Mix Association is really good at answering calls like that, because if the concrete was good from the start, it's you know, almost always going to be something that was put on the top to cause the spalling, you know, because if the concrete was good that first year, well, then first or second year, then it's something that was later done to it. So I would, maybe take some pictures or give them a call and ask them. And then the other part of that is there are different types of sealers that have come on the market, because there's kind of an argument going around to whether to seal the concrete or use, one that is actually vapor impermeable, or whether they want vapor permeable type sealers to allow the moisture that comes from the ground go through the concrete and then be released back in the air instead of getting trapped. Because if you use a possibly vapor impermeable, would be like an oil-based paint, but you wouldn't use that. But something the water can't get out is it may accelerate the spalling, and it may accelerate the degradation of the concrete surface itself. So I would also ask them the same thing. They're really a really good resource.
And that was the Iowa Concrete Association?
The Iowa Ready Mix Association.
Iowa Ready Mix. Okay.
Yep. And because then that also ties in with the sealer or the caulking, because a lot of times people will put the caulking in first and then let the sealer kind of go into that kind of that bond area where the caulking and the concrete come together to help seal that up. And some have the other idea of no. You want to do the concrete and then add the caulking. You'll seal the concrete first, then the caulking. So those are really good resources, because with different admixtures and things have been changing the way the concrete is made. If it's only 6 years old, you'd want to get with them and get a specific product. It's amazing how much you can learn when you get on, like, say, even the National Ready Mix Association. It's amazing the information that's there, and especially for us for upkeep, so that it will last a long time.
All right. Ryan, thank you so much for your call. And Bill, I'm excited because this just helped me learn a new word. Can you define spalling for those of us who have not used that in normal conversation?
Sure. When you're looking on, when you see a sidewalk or driveway, you'll see like it popped off the very, very top of the concrete that was maybe when somebody would finish it, like in the first winter, you'd see it when somebody would finish it and maybe it rained while they're trying to finish it. So it looks really good the next day. And then come winter of the first frost, the very top where the paste was at, the cement paste, mm-hmm. when it would just pop right off because it wasn't adhered to what's underneath. So when it spalls, it just means that whatever that surface, and almost always it is the paste that was left over, it didn't adhere to the aggregate below, and it just pops right off from the frost. And there are a lot of things that cause that.
So. All right. Vocabulary word of the day for
That's
me.
Kind of
Thank
fun.
You, Bill.
We're working on that.
All right. Gary is on the line next in Des Moines at 866-780-9100. You can call us as well. Hello, Gary.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a four-level split home. It has vaulted ceilings on one end. I've got a couple stained areas on the vaulted ceiling, and I wonder if it's because of the vents on the roof. There's four roof vents up there. If that's where it's coming from, how do I stop that?
Well, it's it's a vaulted ceiling. How old is the house?
It was built in 89.
Okay, 89. So were you there when it was built by chance, or... Did you see it?
Well, I'm the original owner.
Oh, okay. So
I wasn't
you kind of
there when it was built.
Oh, okay. Well, a lot of times what happens is if those roof vents haven't been replaced since '89, a lot of times the plastics and sometimes the rubber components, depending on what type of vent it is, they dry out and they crack. And I've seen them where they'll do it 3 or 4 years after some of them are installed, the cheaper ones. So I would just go up there and see what kind of condition they're in, or have a roofer go up and take and check the condition. Is there any way that you can see in between the vaulted roof and the roof deck itself? Can you see that from the inside, the plywood or OSB underneath the roof deck?
I don't know. I've never looked.
Okay. Well, what I would do then is have a roofer or yourself, if you're comfortable with it, is take that vent off and then reach underneath and feel underneath. And maybe you can take your cell phone and stick it down the hole and take a picture of the roof deck underneath it. And if it's darkened at all, or if it's damp to the touch, then that's probably where it's coming in at. Those roof vents, only hold up for so long, and it depends on the pitch of the roof and the which way the wind is going. But if you're seeing dark stains, what it may also be is there's air that comes in and moves the insulation around. If it was like, say, blown fiberglass that was put on the vaulted part, the air will come in, the cold air will come in, drop. Which cold air does, it'll come in the vent and it'll drop straight down. It'll go through the fiberglass and then it hits that warm drywall. If there's no vapor barrier there, it'll hit that warm drywall and it'll stain it. Now, if there is a vapor barrier there, which is plastic, then it's even harder to find, because if there's condensation, it'll run down the plastic and maybe come through a hole somewhere farther down where you think there's a roof leak down maybe 5 feet. If it actually came in somewhere else. So take one of those off, and then you can look down in there and move the insulation around and see if there's any moisture damage there. But it may just be, just simple replacement. I'm hoping that's all
okay.
It is.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for your call, Gary. Here's a question from Sarah in Lisbon. How can I best prepare my windows for winter? I don't enjoy plastic on my windows. It feels a little suffocating. My sister, who has old historic windows in her home, wonders the same thing.
Well, I would start doing some research on the new storms. There are a lot of new storm windows that, especially on historical homes, I've worked on some historic projects where they're accepted, because you don't want to lose the historical significance of the original sashes and the glass. So the new storms aren't obtrusive whatsoever. I mean, you really can't tell that there's a storm on it. So I would do some research on that, because you really want to stop the air from the outside from coming in. So once a good storm window is installed by a professional, because these aren't just, you go out and buy this little galvanized trim thing, professionally installed, that'll knock off about 90% of that air leakage. So one nice thing about that is if it stops that air leakage, the window that's there now will last that much longer. The other thing is, you want to ask, well, what type of window treatments do I have? Do I put down, do I have drapes? Do I have the pleated style? Do I have vented ones that actually let air go back and forth? Because in the winter, this is something I wanted to talk about as well, is in the winter, when we close our blinds, it doesn't matter how good a window you have. If you close that blind at night, there's no air washing across the glass. And so the coolness of the glass causes condensation on the bottom of the window. And then you're getting up in the morning, you raise the drapes, and then it's trashing your window, So that's why a lot of people have gone to vinyl or fiberglass windows. But it may be a case where that's what's causing your problems, is just simple. Nobody was ever told, hey, don't close your drapes all the way down. Leave them up 6-8 inches. Well, then you get into that, well, I don't like, losing my privacy. Well, then you have to make a trade-off. Do I want to wipe them and clean them, or do I want the privacy? So it may come down to just sheer, operation and habits. That may be enough right there. But if you are going to get the storms, look at the professionally installed ones. I mean, they're not going to be cheap, but it's cheaper than a new window. And there's some people that said to say that, you know, storms will pay off in roughly 4 years, new windows 40. That's just a number that gets thrown out a lot at conferences, whether it's true or not. It depends on the window and, you know, who puts them in and that. But take a look at that,
All right,
especially for the historical side, because we don't want to lose the historical significance of that actual sash and glass.
And so we also don't want to just tolerate condensation.
No, that's the worst thing you can have in a house is condensation. It really is. The moisture's, if we would have known in the 70s and 80s when we were really building a lot of these homes, if we would have understand moisture flow, you know, air flow, and how they interact with people that are in there, we'd have much safer homes. I don't think you'd see near the cases of asthma, respiratory issues, but nobody knew. It wasn't a science back then. Now building a home is really a science, not just a garage with walls.
All right, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He is here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, standing by, ready, well, sitting by.
Sitting by.
Ready to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. Our home was built in 1955, and the basement consists of poured concrete walls. We've lived there for about 3 years. There's a bit of a crack in one of the walls that runs diagonally and doesn't seem to be a problem. It hasn't changed since we moved in, and our inspector did not call it out as problematic. I've noticed that in a few places, the face of the concrete has spalled off to the depth of about a half an inch at its worst. We don't get any moisture in the basement, but we do get efflorescence through the wall. Should I be worried about any future deterioration? And if so, what kind of person should I call to come and take a look at it?
Well, that's kind of a, you know, a lot of times the concrete foundation, especially that age, there's probably been some settling around the house, and a lot of times you'll see the diagonal cracks, and in most cases they aren't, they're more cosmetic than anything, because when they poured the concrete wall, there was a web of reinforcement rod in the wall to keep it from, you know, actually spreading, and you know, concrete always, I mean, the old thing is concrete guaranteed to crack. But that's why in many cases, if there's no point where the concrete can have a concentrated crack, or like say where you put cuts in the concrete, like, you know, a person called in earlier, then it'll find a place to crack because it does expand and contract. But the spalling, the efflorescence is what kind of scares me a little bit, and that's because there's some excess moisture coming into the wall somewhere. And, you know, if it's, so you're looking at a house that's basically almost, you know, getting close to 70 years old, basically, you know, let's just round the numbers. And so if there was waterproofing put on the outside, it probably isn't, you know, working now at all. So, you know, there are a lot of products you can put on the concrete on the inside, but then the thing is you're attaching that to something that, that may not be able to hold it, no matter how sticky it is. You're sticking it to a surface that, like, and she mentioned, if it's spalling, that it may just be sticking to the little chips and it's not really holding any moisture out. So you're either going to have to kind of, you know, maybe drop the relative humidity with the dehumidification system in the house, because we don't want to have high levels of moisture, which may be caused by the concrete and lack of waterproofing on the exterior. But it may be such a case that you'll have to hire a waterproofing expert to come out and excavate the outside and put on waterproofing on the house. And I know that seems like a big project, and it is. But if you plan on living there, and if the concrete, you know, is substantially, you know, intact other than these problem areas, then, you know, then maybe you'd want to look at that. Because, yeah, you know, you can bring in someone to patch the concrete and do all that, but still that's more cosmetic than anything. And what you're trying to do is make it a better living space. Because if there's no waterproofing on the outside and you get a wet year like this year, all that moisture goes through the concrete. I mean, concrete is just a big brawny towel. It's just more dense is all. It sucks moisture. You know, you can pull moisture into the air a mile, you know, if it's in a vacuum. So, you know, through concrete. So, you know, I would look at it that way. If you're planning on staying there, to me, it's a good investment. And there are some companies, and I don't have a name right now, but I've seen them at different conferences where they actually excavate the outside with a high-pressure water system and a vacuum, and it's only about a 6-inch wide gap so they don't bring in big equipment, tear your yard up. And when they do that, they waterproof it, and then they insulate. They blow foam in that same gap where the soil was. And so they had this big vacuum pulling that mud slurry out of there. So that way you get it waterproofed, and you also get the basement insulated. So, you know, you may want to look at that. But it all depends on, you know, if that's, you know, if you want to stay there. But there are some, you know, there's a lot of, you know, basement improvement people around. You know, you can bring in, ask their opinion. You know, I mean, mine means absolutely nothing, but you can, you know, ask them. But if you want to stay there and you want to make that home, you know, really livable, that may be the way to go.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Joe's on the line in Burlington. Hi, Joe.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Yeah, so I'm curious about insulating a garage, and I actually bought the insulation quite some time ago, several years ago, and it's got a vapor barrier. So this is for the ceiling. It'd be the, you know, I already got sheetrock up in the garage, and so I bought this insulation with a vapor barrier for the ceiling, and I'm wondering, you know, I've heard both ways. Either, you know, maybe you know it's okay to use it, but then some places suggest not to use a vapor barrier, you know, like the roof rafters where the ceiling is.
Okay, is this going to go against the roof deck, or is it going to go like in the ceiling, like 8 or 10 feet up, the flat part?
Yeah, this will go in the ceiling itself.
Okay.
Yeah, but it won't go on the underneath the roof. It'll go on the ceiling, but of course it'll be, you know, kind of like your house, cold.
Sure.
Up in the attic area, which is not really an attic, but it's,
yeah,
know, in the truss area.
is the floor insulated in the garage by chance, or is it just bare concrete?
Bare concrete.
Are you going to heat it all the time in the winter, or just to go out and have a shop, you know, to work on something?
You know, that's down the road too, a little ways. I got some stuff to do it with, but it's not going to be heated that much at all.
Okay, here's what I've seen in the past, and I've called in on a few projects. What happens when we put fiberglass with, you know, the craft face paper on it? That's what you're talking about, is right? That what they call is a vapor barrier, but it's just that brown craft paper.
Yeah, I think that's all I have. It's just
Yeah.
Deal with it. They do call it a vapor barrier.
Yeah, well, it's a good selling point. Because the center of the paper sure is, but the edges sure aren't. I mean, you know, it's open. So the places that I've gone to when that has been done is I've pulled down 8-inch thick fiberglass with the paper face bats on it. And the roof deck is covered with maybe a 1/2 inch of ice, and because the air gets through, the warm air, when you heat that up, let's say especially if you use like a kerosene heater or something that puts more moisture in, I've seen it where that roof deck would probably maybe last 3 winters, and then the roof sheeting's rotted. It's very hard to do those temporary heating, cooling, and then depending on what kind of heating system he has, to keep that roof deck from failing. So what a lot of them do, a lot of people have done, is they will put the fiberglass without the paper on it, just pull the paper off, shove the fiberglass into that roof deck, and then they will put, like, say, 1 inch of extruded foam, or you know, a high density expanded type sheet foam, you know, like 4x8 sheets, and then they drywall it, and then they have any hole or penetration has to be completely air sealed. The downside to this, though, is in some cases, depending on how the wall is built, and there's a lot of other things, that's considered an unvented roof. And sometimes, depending on the roof color, whether it's light or dark, you'll get condensation underneath that plywood, and you still get the moisture. I would rather see you insulate just the ceiling, and then you can air seal the whole roof ceiling, the flat ceiling, put 5/8 drywall on it for fire, and then blow, say, 12 inches of cellulose on top of that. But it's got to be completely air sealed. The insulating the roof deck is scary, and you'll have friends say, "Oh, use spray foam." I've been to a couple in this past year where the roof deck has rotted out because they put that in incorrectly. It is a science. Spray foam is a science, and the good spray foam people should be commended for studying how to do it correctly, how to know the mixes, the temperatures, and everything. And the other people that are doing it incorrectly should not have that as a business. They're making the good people look bad.
All right, Joe.
So I would just do the flat ceiling and stay away from the roof.
Thanks a lot for your call, Joe. Next, let's go to Ron in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Ron.
Good morning. Earlier you were talking about moisture on the windows, and I was just wondering if you could expand on that a little bit more. We're having a real problem with that. Whenever it gets around freezing, we end up with moisture on the windows inside and below freezing, and it's just solid ice. You almost need an ice scraper. We have checked the humidity levels. They're really low. No problem with that. We added an addition on last year and put some really nice architectural Pella windows on, and we're having that problem in the addition also. I'm just wondering what the heck is going on. We just can't figure it out.
Well, do you have what type of heating and cooling? Is it radiant heat?
We've got a forced air natural gas.
Okay. Is it during the day as well as other than just the night? You know, when there's, do you pull drapes down over the windows?
It's not the drapes. We don't have many drapes at all, but it just seems to be coming. And at night mostly, but whenever it gets cold, it's just every morning, it's almost like a chore that we do is just on the corners, especially. And then at the bottom of the windows, there's moisture, and we've run our humidistat, and the humidity is it's down in the low 40s, and just can't figure it out. We've got a crawl space underneath the house with rock and plastic down, and I'm wondering whether that might be part of it, or it just seems that we just can't defeat it.
Yeah, that could be a considerable point. A lot of windows, even at 40%, a lot of windows, when it gets down, say in the 20s or teens, they'll have a little bit, maybe a quarter of an inch or something. But a lot of times with a forced air system, there's enough air moving, to kind of have air wash. The warm air would brush over onto the glass to help warm the surface of the glass. Because, if you take that, and I was with a bunch of housing officials 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about this, because where you take the reading for moisture is just such a big part of it. If you take whatever you're using, to test the relative humidity, take it over and put it right next to the glass, and it'll probably be 80 to 90%, even if it's 40 in the middle of the room, because it's a colder, because it's a colder surface. So the warm air hits the cold surface and condenses like your windshield does on the outside.
So would we maybe be better off to run, we've got some ceiling fans, maybe to run the ceiling fans to circulate a little bit?
Try to do that, because if you just put in brand new Pellas, they'll tell you, okay, I know what they'll tell you. They'll tell you, well, it's humidity and because it's not the window. When it gets
that's
real,
exactly what they said.
Well, yeah, when it gets real cold. The window can only do so much. So if you don't have some air movement, I try the fan first, and if not, maybe try to find a better a tester for you, like a sling. They call them sling psychrometers, but they make digital versions of a sling psychrometer. You can ask your heating and cooling guy. Hey, we need to do something here. Maybe run the fan more. And you may end up looking at like a whole house dehumidification system. Every house is different, you know, and everybody's habits are different. You know, do you have bath fans in the home?
Yes, we do.
Do they run quite a bit?
We make sure, since we're concerned about this, every time we run the water, we do run the fan just to get rid of the moisture, to keep it as low as we can. So we have been running those also.
Yeah, a lot of friends have been putting timers in so that, you know, when you turn the fan on, that it'll run for 20 to 40 minutes after you leave the room. Mm-hmm. That may help. Okay. And you may want to start just going around and checking that crawl space. That one's crawl spaces always scare me. That plastic, okay, is not just a clear plastic, but it's a heavy, like a 8 to 10 mil poly.
Yeah, it was. We were required to do that, so it's
good.
Very thick.
Good. Just make sure the seams are all, just make sure the seams are all taped and sealed, and it's sealed against the wall. And also, we always insulated the walls, the crawl space foundation walls, with a minimum of 2 inches of sheet, styrofoam.
We've got that. We've got that also. So I'll try to keep some air moving in there. Maybe keep the furnace fan running all the time and see if that works.
Well, yeah, or at least do the fans and do that. But keep an eye on it and call next month and let us know what's going on. I'm kind of curious. If not, we'll try to figure something out.
That sounds like you're doing pretty much everything you can,
yeah,
Ron.
Yeah,
well, frustrating.
Figure something out.
Yeah, all right.
But get a better read on that relative humidity.
Your help.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for your call, Ron. Robert's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Robert.
Yes, I have a problem with my concrete front porch. It's on the west side of the house, and it's shaded most of the day, and then there's trees on the west side, so it's in the shade a good bit, so that's gotten discolored. I'm wondering what's the best way to clean it.
They make
without damaging the concrete.
Yeah, they make some mildew sides. Hardware stores and the big box store, they it's a mildew side. Basically what it is like a mixture of bleach and water. They make a concrete cleaner, and which is kind of a variation of it. But if you go and you look for a concrete cleaner at any of the stores, and you'll put that on, usually they let it sit for a little bit and then scrub it and then rinse it, and it almost always takes some of the stains off. Now, I live under walnut trees, and so I'm never getting that walnut stain. It's a permanent stain. Yeah. Now, if it's just mildew, you know, from the trees and heavy moisture, once you clean it, a lot of times you clean it and then power wash it, it'll clean that up, like, you know, it'll look like new.
Mm-hmm.
But there are mildew sides and concrete cleaners that you can scrub on there.
Okay. Then after it's clean, is there something a good product to put on to discourage mold from growing in the future?
Well, they may have, the mold will still grow, but it maybe to get it off, you can seal it. Ask for the Thoro brand concrete sealer. In your case, that may work real well, but I like the kind that are vapor permeable. So explain what you have, and the paint person, wherever you buy this product at, will tell you if that's correct.
All right, Robert, thank you so much for your call, and we are out of time. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. You never need to miss an episode. Subscribe to the Talk of Iowa podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.